I'm Trevor Cummings, and these are my thoughts on money.
Hello, and welcome to the Thoughts on Money podcast. We like to call Tom. I'm Trevor Cummings, your host of the podcast. And today, I'm your author of the Thoughts on Money blog that I wrote last night that I didn't read this morning. So I might have forgot some of it. So hopefully you guys read it. Blaine really likes the title, Goldie the Rocks title. And the Perma Bears. So I'm here today with Mr. Sean Latimer and Blaine Carver. Blaine, kick us off.
Good morning. Well, I love the title, Goldie Rocks and the Perma Bears. We're obviously going to
sound like a good band.
It does.
Yeah, it totally does.
I think you had maybe a band stint back in the day.
No. I bet you Jimmy did.
Yeah, that was a great podcast last week. So today we're talking about gold and a little bit of adjacent things, but primarily gold and the story of Goldilocks and the Three Bears. So I'm excited to hear your version of Goldilocks and the Three Bears.
Yeah, I mean, I read a lot of kids' books to my kids. And I have some questions about Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Who in the world was letting their little girl wander around the forest alone?
Is that a fair question? It was back in the day.
Okay.
Things were different.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no rules then.
And then she is just a felon, right? Yep. She's breaking and entering. She's there's theft involved.
Yeah.
And she's
porridge.
Hanging out around wild animals. I don't think I like this story.
Kids get away with stuff like that back then, you know?
Yeah, so there's a transition there that I'm saying, hey, I don't think it's a good idea to hang out with bears if you're a little girl. And if you're an investor, I don't think it's a good idea to hang out with perma bears. And for those that haven't heard that term before, we'll just break it down to somebody who is permanently bearish. And Blaine, here's a question for you, because I know Sean knows the answer. Do you know where bulls and bears come from? The terms
bulls and bears. I was told this a couple of years ago.
Trivia. Oh, Sean doesn't know either.
I don't know.
Okay, so when a bull attacks, horns up, goes up. When a bear attacks, claws down.
Yep.
Oh,
so
I have
down.
Heard that. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
So unless somebody made it up just to make me...
Did you just
that's
make
definitely
that up?
What I heard.
No, I didn't make that up. It could be. But yeah, a perma bear is somebody who permanently thinks that markets are headed downward. And we know from studying history that there is an advantage to the optimist, right? That understands that history has shown the resilience of business operators to figure out a way to survive and thrive. And those growing profits equal growing stock prices to the benefit of investors. So as we're all talking right now, there will be headlines that gold is at all-time highs and investors will ask themselves, should I own gold?
Yeah, it happens a lot, especially when there's scary things happening in the world. I do get that question where they say, like, should I just go buy a little bit of gold or silver? And what's interesting is I don't think they even know why sometimes, because I'll ask. I go, oh, are you buying it as like an investment? Like, you think you're buying at a good price, you'll sell it for a profit later. And they're like, yeah, well, you just never know. And I'm like, well, no, I'm trying to find out. Like, what do you mean you never know? Are you thinking scary things happen and you use it as currency? And they're like, well, fiat currency has never survived more than a few hundred years. I'm like, all right, so let's backtrack. You're going to buy gold and like shave off a little bit and then go buy a sandwich. Is that where we're going? And then they're like, well, no, that wouldn't work. I'm like, then what is the purpose of buying gold? And I think that it's important to unpack that.
I love it when John goes zombie apocalypse on people. It's like my favorite thing.
I don't bring it there. They do. And I like it when they take it there, because then I go, well, the problem is they just stole all your gold because you don't have soldiers and weapons. And yeah.
Have you guys seen the new Coinbase commercial?
No.
Oh, really?
I don't think so.
Neither of you? Oh, it's so classic. It's like, I don't know what is in the screen. It might be like a single chair or something. I don't remember that part, but it's like one pizza box and like the camera is like panning around the pizza box and it's like, you know, however long ago, 20 years ago, one Bitcoin bought one pizza box or one pizza. I don't know if you know that the first transaction with Bitcoin.
Yeah,
I heard that.
Was for a pizza,
that.
Right?
Pizza, yep.
So it's trying to talk about inflation. So it's like Bitcoin bought one pizza. It's all, and it's like, 5 years later, you can buy this much pizza. And then a bunch of pizza boxes fall out of the sky.
That's kind of funny.
And then it's like 10 years later. And then it's like, Derek, you get the idea. And then like hundreds of pizza boxes, and it's like, this is how you combat inflation.
Good marketing.
This is, yeah, it was memorable. So you should go watch it. It's actually quite funny. So that's one of the things people will tell you, is that if they don't go zombie apocalypse, like Sean's clients or prospective clients, then they're going to tell you, well, it's because it's a great hedge against inflation.
Yeah, and I think going back to what Sean said, fear sells. Mm-hmm. And when I read this article, I went and Googled just gold stock price chart or gold price chart just to get some context. And sure enough, when I clicked on the first Google link, right away there was a pop-up that said, you know, buy gold bars and then sign up for this newsletter. And so there's a lot of just this fear, whether it's
you
on the
radio. You got to go delete your cookies now, because yeah, everywhere yeah. you go,
tons of marketing now. But just naturally, you know, fear and greed are kind of the two main investor emotions, and fear is a very strong emotion. And there's this idea that the world is always going to come to an end, or maybe your presidential candidate loses the election, and all of a sudden you feel like you need to shift your investment strategy. And gold is just one of those places that historically has been that that place for a lot of people that are can be more on the fearful side.
I like the way Sean framed it too, is this idea that they don't know why, but they think they should. And I felt like that. I've gone into like new environments of sports I haven't played before, or, you know, social settings, and I'm kind of looking around to get a vibe of like, what should I be wearing? What should I be ordering? What should I be doing? So I don't know why, but I'm kind of looking, what is everybody else doing so I can kind of mimic?
Permabears bother me. I have no other way to say it. Maybe it's because I'm a pretty optimistic person to begin with. And I just feel like that kind of personality of glass is always half empty, always got to be looking around the corner. And I think the worst part is they can be wrong for years until they think they're right. And sometimes the argument doesn't make sense. I remember hearing the same thing about interest rates, like, oh, interest rates are going to go up. And you hear talking heads for like years be wrong. Mm-hmm. Every year. And then eventually rates come up, they go, see, told you. And it's like, wait, are we forgetting what happened 5 years in a row? It's kind of the same thing. Like, if you're anticipating a large correction or a bear market, you will eventually be right. But what did you miss out on the way?
Yeah.
And I think that whole argument just kind of drives me crazy.
We have great little quotes and adages in the English language for things like, even a broken clock is right twice a day, or even a blind squirrel can find a nut every once in a while. The broken clock is so true, because, you know, just literally think about it. Wherever those clock hands are, two times a day, they're actually going to be right. But the timing of it, like you said, Sean, is like, they're not accountable for any of this. And that's the most frustrating part.
Yeah. Well, you also mentioned inflation, and Trevor, you brought up a chart in the article. But if you look over a long period of time, and we're maybe biased, but I think we have reason to be, I think stocks, you could argue, would be a better hedge against inflation, with companies that are innovating new products, that are creating new services.
That benefit from inflation, because they're raising their own prices.
Exactly. I think about 2022 as an example. I think inflation hit 9.1%, something like that, from the consumer price index. But if you think about maybe some consumer products companies, or, you know, companies that were producing goods, what do? They just raised their prices, and many of them kept their margins. And so they were still just as profitable at the end of 2022. And then what happened? They had pricing power. That those prices stuck around. We didn't like it as consumers because we were paying more for it, but the actual companies, they were still profitable. They were still chugging along.
Yeah, Trevor, didn't your barber like increase prices a lot? And he was like, inflation, man. And then I don't think they ever went back down, right?
No, they didn't. And one of David's friends, he's an analyst, he has been writing more recently on this concept of, he calls POV, and it's price over volume. So he's basically breaking down, like, think of like a popular soda company, and saying, hey, look at the earnings results of this company. And what we can see is that they've raised prices 16%, but the actual volume of sales have gone down. So they can grow margins through growing prices, even if they're not moving as many off the shelf. So this big concept of POV, price over volume, has been quite popular.
There's probably a lot of like research too, that the higher the price, the less the demand, just because maybe people aren't willing to spend more.
Elasticity and things like that. But it is still a way to drive revenue. But what you brought up, Blaine, 2021 and 2022 were the highest inflation numbers we've seen in this millennium, right? Mm. We've seen over the last 24 years, and the returns for gold in those 2 years were, drum roll please, negative. They were negative returns. It was negative 4% and negative 0.77%. So yes, there isn't a direct relationship that when inflation is X, gold is Y. And that's what I tried to unpack in the article, was this idea of, if you're stuck asking the question, I don't know why, but I think I should, and then you're plugging gold into that, I just want to say, let's look at gold through history, and then let's see if it's been valuable for your portfolio through history. Great, that's one argument. If it hasn't, is there a timing mechanism so you could know when to own gold and when not to own gold? And that's what I'd love the three of us to talk about a little bit. So the first thing I did, I went on a free website, Portfolio Visualizer, and I just ran a pretty quick report to say, hey, run me the returns, as long as the history they had in this report, for gold, stocks, and long-term treasuries. And I think this ran back to 1978 or something like that. So it, you know, it's a good sample size. And what you'll see, you'll have to go to the article to see it, but on the chart, gold had the lowest return out of those three categories. The return for gold over that defined time period was 5.6%. Stocks were 11.74%. And long-term treasuries were 7.09%. And gold also had the highest standard deviation. So not only did it have the lowest return, had the highest standard deviation. Over that time period, it had the largest maximum drawdown from peak to trough. So those are not attractive attributes of an investment that you'd love to include in your portfolio. And I think the most interesting thing about that time period is the second year recorded there, gold was up 126% that single year, and it still failed to keep up with those two assets in that defined time period.
Yeah, it's interesting. And a lot of times when we assess investments, we look at the income it might produce and then the expected price appreciation based off valuation. The hard part about gold is I do look at it as like a commodity trade, because you buy it for one price and maybe sell it for a different price in the future. And you may compare it to like wheat bushels or oil or something like that. But you, in my opinion, you can't, because oil and those other things are actually used. You can see different economic factors that may increase the demand of oil or decrease the demand of wheat. And you can kind of make an argument of why it's a good trade or a bad trade. I just don't see that with gold, because there isn't really a utility and there isn't a use for it, and it doesn't generate income. So you just better be hope you're right on your trade, that you're buying at the right time. And from listeners that have been listening to a lot of these podcasts, we just don't believe in that.
Yeah, and I think the appropriate word that you didn't use but you're alluding to is speculation. This idea, like if you go out and buy a business and nobody ever wants to buy that business from you, it's actually okay. Because you can just collect the profits from that business as long as you paid a fair price and that business is sustainable and growing and you can participate in the profits. You can own that business forever. You can own that piece of real estate forever. Nobody else has to buy it if you have renters in there and you can collect the income. What Sean's saying is that here's an asset that produces no cash flow. Mm-hmm. So the sole hope here is that if I buy it at today's price, I am speculating that somebody in the future is going to pay a higher price than I paid today.
Yeah, and I even think about, we've talked about this on the podcast before, but the reason you invest is to eventually spend the money, whether it's you or a charity or your heirs. Eventually, the point of investing is to spend that money. But I even think about like venture capital companies, right? A lot of them are not profitable, but you are investing in them because one day you hope they will have profits. And because you're a part owner, you'll get a share in those profits, whether it's an eventual dividend or an eventual sale. But you alluded to it, there are no profits with gold. There's no cash flow attached to it. It's the classic fundamentals and sentiment. Those are the kind of the two things that drive investments over time. Fundamentals being typically profits or cash flow from a company. Sentiment just being whatever you and I and the rest of the world are feeling. You know, if we wake up happy, maybe we'll press the buy button. If we wake up depressed, we'll press the sell button. But yeah, there's no cash flow attached. So there is no way to properly value it. It's whatever the next person is willing to pay for it, which is hard.
And it does, and it's not like a safe place to put the money either. As you just pointed out, it has a really high standard deviation, which means it can fluctuate huge amounts. So it's not like a, it's a good place to park it if you plan on using that money soon.
Yeah, yeah, for that time period I chose, the again, the maximum drawdown was 60%. So in real literal terms, it means if I bought $100 of gold over that time period, right? If I bought it the wrong time, at some point I could have looked and said, I can only resell this for $40. So then it creates a waiting period, right? One of the things I bring up towards the end of the article was that we're talking about gold being at all-time high, right? The price of gold at the beginning of this year was the same price that it was 12 and a half years ago. And I'm going to write an article soon about this. I think it's easy to forget that those steep or deep drawdowns erase a lot of returns. Mm-hmm. We know, the three of us know the rule 72. So if I get a 7% return for 10 years, I double my money. Mm-hmm. But what happens then if on the 11th year I get a 50% drawdown? Then I'm back to my original price, right? So it's easy to erase returns with deep drawdowns, and it creates a big hole to dig out of, like the 12 and a half years I just described. And that's what I was trying to do in the article. I was trying to say, hey, I'm going to grab a random time period that this, you know, free tool produced, and see, was it attractive over that long time period? Okay, the answer is no. And then my next thing, like Blaine was talking about, I wanted to see, okay, that's fair, but is there a way to know when to go in gold and when to get out of gold? And you'd need a valuation metric. Now, when we talk about stocks, there actually is a valuation metric. It's not a good timing mechanism, but if you look at stock valuations, you can use a whole lot of different metrics, right? Price to cash flow, price to earnings, whatever. But for our listeners, we'll make it easy. If I take a stock price and I compare it to profits, there's a multiple that's historically been average, like call it fair value. If it gets above that average, the expectation is that future returns will be below average. So now you have a mechanism based on the profits that are being produced to try to see, is something historically fairly valued, undervalued, overvalued? You don't have a mechanism to do that with gold.
I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit here. This is not my
You're
own view.
Blaine owns a lot of gold.
Let's go with me here. So a lot of advisors, at least that I've interacted with, will have some allocation to gold as part of the portfolio. So I'm not talking about the permabears who are talking about timing and putting 50% or 70% of their money in gold, but more of an asset allocation strategy, a small piece of their portfolio. It's often posed as, hey, it's an uncorrelated asset. Curious to hear your thoughts.
I mean, I'll start. So the first thing I would say is, okay, what percentage are you going to put in there?
Most often here, 3%, 5%, 7%, something like that.
So, I'm, you know, we're friends, so I'm joking around with you, but it's a nothing burger. It's not even going to make a difference.
Doesn't move the needle.
Yeah, like a 3%. You and I talked about something similar the other day when we were looking at, hey, should we do a 3 or 5% allocation here? And I'm like, you're going to add like four line items to the strategy for something that's not going to move the needle. Let's go back to the idea that gold was up, you know, 100%. A 3% allocation that's up 100% adds a 3% to the bottom line. Mm-hmm. So and 100% would be rare. So you have something going up 10% and you have a 3% allocation, it adds, you know, 0.3 of 1% to the actual bottom line. So the attribution is not significant. And to me, it just adds clutter. That's my personal opinion. And if you ran some like regression analysis or some backtesting with or without it, it's not going to, at that size, mm-hmm. it's not going to make a significant difference in outcomes.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking the same thing.
You don't have another opinion? Come on, give another opinion.
I thought your article went a different direction. When you were talking about Goldilocks, I thought it was going to be about the portage being too hot.
The porridge cold. Or
porridge,
the portage.
Porridge.
And just right, I don't eat a lot of porridge. And so I was like, oh, I know where he's going with this. And I did not.
Oh, tell me more. Where did you think I was going?
I didn't know. I thought you were going to do something like, it's too hot, too cold, just right. Kind of like you just did, like overvalued, undervalued.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, maybe
Sean's writing an article
one.
Next week.
Mm. There you go.
No.
The same title.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
2.0.
Yeah.
But the other thing I'll add here is that this wasn't really meant, even though we're bashing gold as an investment, I don't really care about that. Mm-hmm. I'm more saying there is a cottage industry out there of people that are selling you gold every single day. And those articles, more for Blaine than Sean and I now, because he's clicked on a couple of them. Yeah, but those are going to start surfacing. And I'm going to go back. I love that Sean introduced this. I'm going to go back to that concept. It totally makes sense to me, is that somebody doesn't know why they should do something, but they have a feeling that they should. And that is a tough place to be.
Yeah, you mentioned it too. Even in recent history, it hasn't performed the way people expected, and even during volatile times. And so I think it's a delicate dance when someone said, I want to do this, and you say, okay, help me understand, and then they can't. And so you just have to politely ask nicely why multiple times till you kind of get them to their own answer that, oh, maybe it's not the best thing.
Yeah, and to maybe paint that picture for what I'm thinking in my mind for our listeners, if you're in environments you've never been before, and you know, you've heard things like imposter syndrome and things like that, and you feel out of place, you will look around naturally to see what others do, and you will try to mimic that behavior. And sometimes it can create funny scenarios, right? I remember reading, what's that book called? Hillbilly Elegy. Mm-hmm. And J.D. Vance talks about how he grew up in, you know, the Rust Belt of Ohio, and how he grew up and what his grandmother was like. And he didn't have a lot of exposure to wealth, right? And now all of a sudden, I think he had gotten out of the military, and maybe he went to Yale grad school, and they're doing that whole thing where they go and try to figure out where they're going to be an intern or a clerk or whatever. So you're going to these fancy dinners, right? And meeting these partners and really putting yourself out there. He's never been in these settings, right? He talks about a friend helping him buy a suit and what he needs to wear just so he can kind of fit in. So the waiter comes up to him and they say, do you want water? And he's like, yes. And they're like, still or sparkling. He don't know what that means. So he's like, sparkling sounds fancy. So he's like, yeah, sparkling. So they give him the water. And I think he, again, I'll butcher this part, but I think he's like talking to somebody important. He takes a sip and he like spits it out. He's like, something's wrong with this water right now. And it's that example of, you don't know why. You don't know why it's called sparkling water, but you see other people are ordering it, so you think you should, and that can create a lot of chaos. And that's why the encouragement for investors, if you're in a decision or a place where you're in a little bit over your head, or Sean will say, like, over your skis a little bit, invite somebody in that mm-hmm. knows what they're doing, and I can't encourage that enough.
It's a good movie, by the way. I haven't read the book. I think about the quote.
Who plays the grandma? Glenn Close?
I don't know. I'm not good with actors.
I watched it recently. Brian Tong says no. I don't remember her name, but I think she's a famous actress.
He would know.
Yeah, he will know.
Well, I was just going to say, I think about the quote. I don't know who has said this, but you are the average
source.
Yeah, cite your source, exactly.
Oh, yeah, we mentioned that. Dude, me and my friends.
You are the average of your five closest friends. Have you guys heard that quote?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think about that with our exposure to news sources or social media or friends, because if you kind of go one direction and all those people are permabears, then you're probably going to become a permabear.
I'd just like our listeners to know that Brian Tong right now is citing my source, and I was absolutely right. It is Glenn Close.
Oh, nice.
So,
good call.
Good guess.
The funny part, the only reason I remembered that cite your source is because there's always times where I like read something or hear something, and I'm like, oh, that's so good. And then time goes by, and I remember what it was, but I have no idea where I heard it. Mm-hmm. And so if you did make me cite my source, I would not know half the time.
Yeah, for people that haven't read the article and they're just listening to this, I have, you know, a handful of close friends. We spend a lot of time together. And as you can imagine with young men, stories get embellished and claims and things like that. So a common thing amongst my friends, they put this little accent on and they go, cite your source, sir, cite your source. And it's kind of like calling, you know, we won't use the word on here, but calling BS on somebody, say, yes. Like, I actually don't think that's true. It makes for a good story, but I don't think that's true. And what we did in this article is we encouraged investors to say, if something seems fishy, if something, we say a lot, seems too good to be true, then it's too good to be true. So if you're reading a newsletter of a no-brainer, even that word, be careful. And that's what I wanted to bring today. Again, I'm not an analyst on our team. I shouldn't be in discussions about you know, the intricacy of what to buy and the granular stuff of this stock versus that stock. I just ran some real basic look at, hey, here's, call it 45 years of how these things have behaved. And I took a finance 101 class. And I know if something has a lower return, but a whole lot higher standard deviation, yes, the non-correlation can help. But if there's no timing mechanism of when to own that, not own that, I just think you put it, like Warren Buffett says, in the too hard pile. Just opt out.
We talk about this with cash. You know, some investors will want to go to cash, and often we'll come back and say, okay, what if you get the first decision right to get out of the market? Maybe it's the top of the market, you go to cash, great, you feel good. But the harder decision is when to get back into the market. Same thing applies with gold. When you're getting in or out of that, there's two decisions there. And so that's what I encourage you to think
through. At least with cash, the idea is that the value will still be there. If you're trying to go from the market to gold and it has a huge decrease, then now you can't change your mind. You have to wait.
Yeah, and I think the other thing from you know, a few moments ago, what we're talking about, like you guys talked about, hey, the average advisor is throwing 5 or 10%. Well, it's not a meaningful position to move the needle, like Sean said. And the tough part, because we're so cash flow oriented, if you make it a meaningful position, you know what I mean? Like, let's say you put half your money in dividend stocks, they're doing 4%, and they put half your money in gold. Well, now your cash flow is only 2%. Mm-hmm. So again, it's hard for me to see how you integrate this in a defensible way. And I just want to encourage people, you don't have to own everything. Right? You should build a portfolio that matches your financial plan, that's within your level of comfortability, and that you can lay out a basic structure for, hey, here's my reasoning for doing this, which is why all three of us have trouble sometimes when we talk about cryptocurrency, because we're like talking to investors like, okay, like just walk me through it. How does it work? Like, what's the use case? What's the utility? How do you know when the price is good? How do you know when the price is bad? And the answer is just like, YOLO.
Go to the moon.
YOLO, man. HODL.
They just say, you don't get it.
You don't get it, exactly. Any final thoughts, Blaine?
So another quote that always has stood out to me, as investors, we often overestimate what we can do in 1 year, but we underestimate what we can do in a decade.
Bill Gates.
Is it Bill Gates? I need to cite my sources.
I think it is.
Either that or Glenn Close.
Yeah, I don't think that one. But this idea, like I think about when the iPhone came out, I think it was 2007 or something like that. When it first came out, I was fairly young, but and I certainly didn't have one for a number of years. But if I remember, there was this idea of like the world is going to completely change. And people thought it was going to change overnight. And the reality is it was kind of it was a fast adoption overall, but not everybody had an iPhone, you know, maybe a quarter of the population, whatever it was. But then if you look a decade out to 2017, our world had completely changed from 2007. And partly because we couldn't even imagine the innovation and the efficiencies and all the different things that we could have done with the iPhone, like Uber. That's not a thing without the iPhone and all these different applications. And so just something to think about, optimism, thinking in the future, like there are businesses out there that are going to be more efficient, create new services and products, and that's what we like to invest in.
Are you trying to encourage the perma bears out there to try and be a little bit more positive?
I'm trying to encourage the perma bears. Everything is awesome.
That's right.
I'm not going to sing it.
Yeah, you almost did. Yeah. I was waiting. I'll say something for all the people out there that I don't want to use the word gold bugs, but if you are passionate about gold and you think it's a good trade, we invite the conversation. Send us when a good time is. Educate us. Tell us where we're wrong.
Yep.
Send it to Sean.
And Trevor.
It's funny that you mentioned that, though, and this will be my final thought, about the impact the iPhone had on the world, right? What I tell people, if we went back in a time machine, right? So the three of us go in a time machine and we go to 1999, right? Stock prices are going wild. Mm-hmm. Throw .com on the end of anything and the price is just going through the roof, right? Yep. We all know our history books. So if we go there, here's what I think we're going to find out. People are overestimating these companies, right? With the .com name. We already know that. History shows that. They're overestimating the price, right?
Yes.
But I think people don't get this. They are absolutely underestimating the internet, right? Yeah. People in 1999 were all about the stock price and overvaluing these things. Some of these stocks, we own some of them, that the prices today are less than they were in 1999. Mm-hmm. So they overvalued, but they had no idea how much the internet was going to change the world.
So true.
So it goes back to Sean's kind of broken clock theory, is that they were right. Like the internet was bigger, better, and greater and more impactful than they were ever imagined, but they didn't make any money. You know what I mean? So this idea of stock prices being linked to profits and valuation matters is huge. And you could absolutely be right that cryptography is going to change the world, or AI. Let me tell you something, though. That doesn't mean that you're gonna find a great investment. Those two things are not one and the same. So with that said, we'll ask that our readers rate the podcast. Obviously, you'd rate it 5 stars because of these great titles, Goldie Rocks and the Perma Bears, Blaine's new band. You can listen to them next week, him and Jimmy.
Nobody would listen to that.
Jimmy Live. And if you want to argue about gold with Sean, you can email him at Tom, T-O-M, at thebonsagroup.com. He would love to engage you and have a conversation. Any questions, comments, compliments, whatever you'd like, all is welcome. And we will be back next week with more of our
Thoughts on Money.
The Bonson Group is registered with Hightower Securities, LLC, member FINRA and SIPC, and with Hightower Advisors, LLC, a registered investment advisor with the SEC. Securities are offered through Hightower Securities, LLC. Advisory services are offered through Hightower Advisors, LLC. This is not an offer to buy or sell securities. No investment process is free of risk, and there is no guarantee that the investment process or the investment opportunities referenced herein will be profitable. Past performance is not indicative of current or future performance and is not a guarantee. The investment opportunities referenced herein may not be suitable for all investors. All data and information referenced herein are from sources believed to be reliable. Any opinions, news, research, analysis, prices, or other information contained in this research is provided as general market commentary. It does not constitute investment advice. The team and Hightower shall not in any way be liable for claims and make no expressed or implied representations or warranties as to the accuracy or completeness of the data and other information, or for statements or errors contained in or omissions from the obtained data and information referenced herein. The data and information are provided as of the date referenced. Such data and information are subject to change without notice. This podcast was created for informational purposes only. The opinions expressed are solely those of the team and do not represent those of Hightower Advisors, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Hightower Advisors do not provide tax or legal advice. This material was not intended or written to be used or presented to any entity as tax advice or tax information. Tax laws vary based on the client's individual circumstances and can change at any time without notice. Clients are urged to consult their tax or legal advisor before establishing a retirement plan.